Welcome back to the MLL podcast. My name is Kyle Devitt. I am the gear and lifestyle editor at Inside the Cross, and I am joined, as always, by IL MLL writer Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what's up, man? We got a champion.
We got a champion? We got a season finale going out? Let's pay some tribute to the champs.
Oh, no. Does one of us have to die if it's the season finale? Got to leave him on a cliffhanger.
Something's got to happen.
What are we going to do? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to start with our championship recap regardless. The final score, the Denver Outlaws 16, the Dallas Rattlers 12. In my opinion, this game had it all. It was a slow start for Dallas, but they made a game of it in the second quarter, battled the Outlaws to a one-goal deficit at the half, came all the way back to take the lead more than once. But man, the highlight for me is that second quarter. For me, it really was the best lacrosse I saw all year. What did you think?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Just specifically that quarter, but then, you know, taking a look back the whole game in its entirety, it's just, it's kind of what you want, you know, it's just as an audience, as fans, whatever, as somebody presenting this to casual observers. Like, this was a great game, and, you know, I guess I don't want to say, I guess we deserved it, you know, slog through some bad ones sometimes, but we got a good one, and it's just great, both ends of the field. It's just a phenomenal game.
I think it was the perfect game for people that are scared of the shot clock to watch. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, there wasn't too much just, like, chucking the ball in the corner. Top of my head, I think Denver did it once, like toward the end of the game. But it wasn't like the shot clock really was this giant burden that they were dealing with most of the time, generating awful shots or useless turnovers or things like that. So yeah, if you were nervous about it and you watched this game, you're like, okay, maybe it isn't as intrusive as I might have thought.
It's really not. And I hope people picked up on that. Matt Kavanaugh, the Denver Outlaws, picked one hell of a game to have the best performance of his career. 9 points in an MLL championship is one of the most impressive individual feats I can remember, at least in an MLL title game. How did he do it? What did he do to get all of those points on the board?
So I think the coolest thing about Kavanaugh's performance is the fact that he did it in like such a variety of ways. You know, sometimes you'll have, you know, one person who's just the most dominant attackman and can just run by everybody, or, you know, somebody with a huge size advantage can just run through people. But he kind of did it different sorts of ways. You know, you had one of his goals where, you know, he snagged his own rebound and then, you know, threw a bunch of fakes and finished it. And that's just, you know, what a combination of, you know, properly expecting where the ball is going to go and, you know, kind of the tenacity to get in there. And, you know, maybe it was an error on Dallas's part, you know, not picking him up or going for the ball in that situation, but just taking advantage of that sort of thing. And then you had a couple of his goals that were simply just, you know, being able to get a step on his defender and kind of, you know, he's obviously a fast player, but then you also have to incorporate like angles into it. And so I noticed two of his goals in particular, I was like, wow, he just took really smart angles to beat his defender. And, you know, in those cases, you know, he was being covered by Matt Dunn, who, you know, tremendous defender who had a fantastic season. But, you know, he was just finding ways to get like a step on him and keep the stick protected. And then you have all the assists he's throwing in there. You know, one was just on a turnover. I remember crossing over midfield. He kind of had to do a little lift check on his defender and then grab the ground ball, and then, you know, keep the ball moving in transition. So he just kept finding different ways to do it, which I thought was the most tremendous part.
Yeah, that was Law's one goal, and we'll get to that later on. But Eric Law, not crazy involved, at least on the score sheet, very involved in the possessions. When we talk about this game years from now, what are we going to talk about? For me, it's Max Adler. You know, he got injured, went down, tried to come back, was ginger on the sidelines. He was spelled very admirably by Nick Acello for a few draws, even won a couple. But the moment when Adler kind of walked, like, slowly but like powerfully back to the X, like clearly hobbled, but like gritting his teeth and getting down and battling with Drew Simoneaux for those second half draws the whole time. It was a sight to behold. And it's definitely one of the things that stood out for me. What's something that you're going to remember from this championship?
Well, first of all, yeah, I definitely agree that the Adler thing was huge. When he went down, I was just concerned that, you know, like, well, first of all, it looked like he wasn't going to be coming back out there. But then I was like, okay, is this game going to get awful now? You know, just like we're going to feel cheated as fans. And, you know, Simoneaux's going to win every single faceoff, and then you'll never know what really could have happened. So, yeah, but he got back out there and threw down and kept finding ways to win. For me personally, I'm going to remember the return of Chris Kluche from, you know, seeing him go down the last time Denver and Dallas played each other. And when he went down in that game, I remember thinking, okay, you know, maybe he's done, you know, like the season's kind of winding down. Lower body seems to be, you know what I mean? Like he could buckle a knee or something like that. It's kind of, you know, kind of a tough thing to get by on. So we hadn't seen him at all. We talked about it on the podcast last week, and everybody who listened knew that he was in the area, but that was all that anybody knew. Like, he was in the state of South Carolina. He was going to be there, but as far as playing, that was either a game day decision or a we're not going to tell anybody till game day decision. And so just seeing him back out there, just the kind of – he wasn't – like constantly dominant, because, you know, I mean, he didn't need to be. Plus, we don't know, you know, he's 50%, 20% what his deal was. And also, like, you know, Matt Cavanaugh was just cooking left and right anyway, so they didn't need Chris Kluche to be 7-point Chris Kluche. But when he did get the ball, he was still making incredible things happen. You know, I mean, he still threw out that one-handed shot that basically wrapped around his defender and you know, snuck it into the goal. So just seeing him back out there after these past couple of weeks and in a limited sort of time, still doing something incredible that got people talking. So I'm going to remember his return to help out leading the championship.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're talking about him coming back, but I do want to lead out with something. I have had at least five people reach out to me for the answer of why Ben Reeves wasn't available for the Rattlers. And I can just tell you he wasn't available. That's all I'm going to tell you. That's all I know. But I actually don't think that was the biggest difference in the game, because for me, it was the Rattlers not adjusting well to Wolf being shut off. You know, Joe Keegan wrote a long piece on IL right now about how Denver's defense adjusted. And listen, they did. But the other half of that coin is that Dallas didn't adjust, or rather, they didn't adjust to an effective attacking lane or option. What did you make of the Rattlers' offense, Outlaws defense battle? Because I thought that was definitely going to go the other way going into the game.
Yeah, real quick, weird thing about Ben Reeves, he hasn't lost a lacrosse game since May 6th. The Rattlers' losses, he was not there for. And he won, you know, out his college season. So, yeah, May 6th is the last time he walked off a field. Like, darn it. But to the point of Wolf being shut off, I thought that was a huge difference maker as well. And I was, I guess, surprised that there didn't seem to be kind of a different approach taken for a while. It reminded me a lot of what we were all kind of dealing with during the Jeff Teague Cornell situations. It seemed too easy. Like, it seemed like you shouldn't just be able to say, all right, well, we shut him off, and then we just go 5-on-5, you know? It doesn't seem like that should be an option that both teams kind of agree to address in that fashion. And that's what it looked like for the Rattlers for a large portion of it. It just seemed like I kept expecting them to do something different, you know? Like, something weird, I don't know, put Crotty back there as the attackman and start bringing Wolf out the box and then invert and at least try to make some weird matchups happen or something. you know, I mean, they moved around the slot a little bit, kind of almost felt like after the fact or whatever. But yeah, I do agree with you. I kind of thought it was going to go the other way. I think the Rattlers offense, it shined like individually. Like I thought Randy Stotts was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I expected something more to take place involving Ty Thompson, not even necessarily. And if it wasn't him, you know, scoring more, I still, you know, thought, okay, maybe we'll see him somewhere else. You know, see him pulled out on the wing, or, you know, maybe see him going through the box and putting the third guy out there just to try to shake up that Lost defense a little bit more. Like, I thought maybe if they could get a matchup where they had Wolf out there and, you know, again, maybe like Crotty and Stotts playing attack, then you might have a different matchup. And then, like, Bocklet has to take Stotts, and that might be different than Bocklet on Thompson. It didn't seem like they had a counterpunch in time. I think that was probably the way I'd best summarize it.
Yeah, I mean, not to be like I called it, but they used Bocklet just how I thought they were going to, which is he's like a hedger helper, and he's out there to help handle the ball. You know, Thompson didn't move enough to be a threat, and Bocklet was able to do what he needed to do defensively to help whenever Dallas even thought about penetrating, which I thought was... I think you're right. You're spot on with Crotty going and maybe trying to get a shorty and inverting, but they weren't about to let that happen. My thoughts on shutoff are, if you're being shut off, the first thing you do is see how far the guy will follow you. So, I mean, I've been shut off when I played in college, and all I would do is run to the corner and see if the guy would follow me. And if he followed me, I'd be like, well, that's over. Maybe I'll go play midfield or something. But if he doesn't follow you, there's a lot of other things you can do. You know, they tried to get him restarts off the end line, and that was kind of limited because they would set a pick, and then the defender on the pick wouldn't switch, but he would throw that little check to be like, I'm here, you know, as soon as he went around the pick. So I think they tried too much to get him the ball, and it milked like 13 to 20 seconds off their possessions, which if you're an NCAA coach at home watching this game, you're like, oh, well, if we shut a guy off and we just frustrate him, and then it takes them 15, 20 seconds to try and switch, that's time off the shot clock. That helps us. So maybe we're thinking about coaching with a shot clock now, guys, right? We're thinking about it. Now you're seeing it.
Yep.
You've got this great kind of little petri dish of great players playing with and against it. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on with that. Are you surprised by the game we got? And are you shocked by anything that happened given the vast amount of talent that both these teams possessed?
No. So I think the second question kind of answers why I wasn't surprised. I thought from, I guess, the narrative standpoint, you're like, man, you know, the Rattlers have just been, you know, steamrolling everybody. It looks like everything has been accounted for. It looks like all these boxes are checked. You know, this should be the year that everything gets wrapped up nicely. But, you know, that things don't work like that all the time, you know, and I mean, you still have to beat the Outlaws, and they just keep being dominant, right? I mean, every other year, they're winning the championship now. So, I mean, their regular season wasn't as great as, you know, some of the ones they've had in the past, and it certainly wasn't as great as Dallas's, but, you know, there's still a reason they are just always there, and it's just, they just keep finding ways to get them done. You know, they're the boss at the end of the level, like regardless of the regular season record.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, they just, I mean, there were little things I was surprised about, like you did mention Eric Law with his one goal. But I think what that kind of comes down to is what Law is better than anybody else at is making you account for him. You know what I mean? Like that's like, he's good at dodging. He's good at shooting, all that stuff. But what he does that kind of separates him from, you know, the other top 10%. It's like he forces you to constantly be aware of him. And when people slip, that's when he cashes in. And so I think the Rattlers were super, super focused on making sure somebody else, you know what I mean? It's like, no, you snuck by us that one time. It's like somebody breaking into your car or something like that. You're going to know where they are from that point forward. So I think they were very hyper aware of Eric Law at all times. And that might have helped Matt Cavanaugh a little bit as well. I think they kind of picked their poison, but certainly takes nothing away from Cavanaugh. Because, I mean, he's got 7-point, 6-point games in his resume all over the place. So it was not like a fluke performance. But, yeah, I mean, either team that won this, neither one would seem like the, plucky underdog that finally made it happen. They're, you know, two dominant teams. So, you know, I think I'm just happy that we got an excellent game.
Yeah, I think the Outlaws are the pessimist sports fans like epitome of the regular season doesn't matter at all and I only watch the playoffs. Do you know anyone like that? That's like, oh, I only watch the NHL when the playoffs are on.
Sure.
So like, I think unfortunately it's going to lead into that little conversation, but I think that the Outlaws in how they run things, the players they bring in, the moves they make, the transactions that they pull off, the quality of character guys that are in that squad. And by the way, out of it, because I don't know if you saw on Twitter, a bunch of ex-Outlaws who maybe like got cut or traded were like cheering them the whole time. Like you think there might be a little ego there, and there isn't, because when you play for the Outlaws, like you know that that's the place everyone wants to play. You know, and when you leave, like you're just happy to be part of that family in many ways. So I think that was eye-opening for me, just watching the game and kind of live scoring it on Twitter like I was. But yeah, they definitely ruined the narrative. You're an apt name team, Outlaws. You definitely screwed with the nice ending there for John Callaway and all those Team USA guys finishing with an MLL title. But that's your right. Such is your right, you know. And I'm sure all the Canadian guys are like, no, we figured out the narrative and wrote it our way, and now we have it. Yeah. So there's two sides of that. Either way, we were treated to an excellent title game, and you know, we did deserve it. We did. I feel like we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
It's okay to treat yourself. All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's move on to our recommendation of the week. And mine is going to be a little, I'm going to get a little spiritual on you right now. So.
Okay.
I know. Everyone's like, wait, what? Someone just turned the podcast up a little bit. Like, what do you say? My recommendation is to take a break from the cross, man. Maybe you've done that. Maybe you don't know how. Let me help you. So I would suggest finding another activity that you like but doesn't stress you out. And I know a fair amount of college football fans, and all of them are walking outbursts. So college football is not the answer unless you just want to watch games for the hell of it and not root for a team. I'm just saying. Just in my experience, we don't have a lot of college football fans in the Northeast because we don't have any teams that are any good. So maybe don't even watch sports. Like, find a leisure activity. Whatever you do, find a little measure of inner peace by unplugging from the sport for a while. Personally, I'm taking my second annual September sabbatical from social media. And I would encourage you all, if you're a little lacrossed out, if you're just like kind of burnt out in general, I would just do that. Do that for September, man. It's real toxic out there on the social mendies. And a break is good for you. Okay? It's good for all of us. And that's my recommendation of the week. Take a break. What's yours?
Man, good for you. I'm going to do like a baby break. Like I'm going to try to build up to a month. You know, maybe I'll take like an hour and then I'll take a day and then eventually I'll get there where I take like a month off from social media. Because you're right. It's terrible for you and good for you. I should follow the same eventually. My recommendation is So I've been putting together, I mentioned this before, because it was kind of part of another recommendation. So I've been putting together a playlist over on Spotify for the summer, broken into three parts. And each part has been a different summertime vibe. Like, it started with the hammock mix, which was like laid back kind of stuff. And that came out around Memorial Day. And so in July, I did the barbecue mix, which was like heavier stuff, like funk stuff you dance to at my barbecue. And the last one is coming out as soon as I finish it, and that's the pool mix, which is kind of in the center of both things. You know, it's like a little bit more pop and rock and like dancing kind of things, like stuff that just makes you happy. Like, so nobody's going to do the electric slide to the pool mix because that, it just won't fit, but like maybe more Carlton dancing kind of vibe stuff. But so it's not officially done yet, but I hope that putting it out there into the air, putting it on the podcast, mentioning it will make me stop screwing around and I will actually go wrap it up and post it. And so since this is the last podcast, I also figured I'd put it out there now. So check this weekend on my Spotify for the pool mix, the conclusion to the trilogy. And if it isn't there, just wait a little bit longer because it's coming soon.
I just realized I work for a lacrosse magazine and I told people to stop caring about lacrosse. So I'm going to take that back and just recommend.
Still buy the magazine.
Yeah, yeah. No, you should still buy it. I think maybe I'll just change it to, hey, why don't you take a break from social media? Okay. It'll be good for you, yes, man. You don't know what it does to you until you're off it. It's true. It's a little dopamine hit every time someone asks you. Trust me, I know. Okay? That's how it works. All right. Let's bring in our final guest. And true to form, we changed it up for you guys. It's a coach. It's a championship coach. It's Mr. BJ O'Hara, the head coach of the 2018 MLO champion Denver Outlaws, right now. I'd like to welcome into the MLO podcast the head coach of your 2018 MLO champion Denver Outlaws, Mr. BJ O'Hara. BJ, how's it going, man?
It's doing great, Kyle. Thanks for having me. I have to apologize a little bit. I'm at a concert, so I try to find a quiet place. You may hear a little drum beating in the back, but I think we'll be good.
You're a pro. I trust you. I wanted to say congratulations on another title with the Outlaws. And my first question for you is kind of tell us one thing about this team that maybe we don't see as outside observers. Like one like thing about this group of guys that maybe doesn't get focused on enough by people like us in the media.
Well, you know, like every good team, you need great leadership, you know, from the top, and our organization is, in my opinion, among the very best. You need great leadership in the locker room, and we've got four guys that have been through the wars, you know, with Eric Law, Mike Simon, Drew Snyder, and Matt Bocklet. And then, we got some guys that, you know, we kind of find digging through someone called it the junk pile of the supplemental draft, but we find some guys that we feel are really, really good players, and they are team guys, and they play together. They don't get a lot of attention in the limelight, but they are really, really great lacrosse players and great teammates. So, you know, that's sort of our MO. You know, we try to find guys we think will fit in and that we think, you know, not necessarily the guys that get all the attention coming out of college, but guys that we observe and think they can, you know, really get the job done. And they, you know, our leaders help them mesh well. And I think those are the kind of things that make it happen.
So, Coach, aside from the fact that it's the most recent, what was different about this championship? Like, what do you think you're going to remember the most about it and your team's run leading up to it?
Oh, gosh, that's a toughie. Every year is a different story. You know, as this coaching staff, you know, it's a different puzzle to put together. This year we had a lot of different things that we had to deal with in terms of putting the puzzle together, because we had a lot of, you know, we love our Canadian guys, but they come with a lot of a lot of baggage in terms of their indoor seasons and so we had to kind of piece a team together all year long. So that early part of the year, we were circling around trying to get the right guys in every week, and our roster changed just about every week. But the guys we brought in, I think our veterans did a great job of welcoming whoever we brought in and getting them to feel comfortable and ready to contribute. So, I guess that was part of it. We had a lot of different faces in the lineup every week, but somehow it all seemed to fit together.
You coached against Bill Warder, someone you have coached when he was a player, coached alongside, and have an all-around solid relationship with. What was that experience like for you, and what did you say to him after the game?
As you can imagine, those are bittersweet moments. He's a guy, Billy was a ball boy when I was, at Hobart, and he went on to be a really good player for us. As a goalie, led us to a national championship, coached with me when I had my first MLL championship in Rochester. He's one of the really, really great, great people. He's very bright. I told him after the game, I love to win as much as anybody in the world, but not at your expense, so it was hard. He was heartbroken, as I knew he would be, because he's a competitor. He's a great coach, and there's no surprise that Dallas had the success that they did, and that he got the award as Coach of the Year, because he surely deserved it. And I even voted for him. He's just one of my favorite people on earth.
Coach, who's somebody in your lineup that you feel doesn't necessarily get enough recognition, or maybe excels at some of the little things that we might not notice?
Well, we got a few of those guys. I think our team is made up of a lot of guys like that. Eli Goldbrecht, we had to make some changes at halftime matchup-wise on defense, and he ended up on Jordan Wolf, which is a tall order for anybody. Eli, he's just kind of a newcomer and doesn't get a lot of time in the limelight. Finn Solo is another guy. Nick Tintle, he got recognized a little bit this year, in the reporting. But Nick is if I was picking teams for any sport, any team, he'd be one of the first guys I'd take. Nick Ocello is a guy that, he's a bull in a china shop, but he brings so much energy to practice, to the locker room, and he knows his limitations. He jokes about his limitations, but he's just an outstanding teammate. And those are the kind of guys that really help you, get over the hump, those times are tough. He's always got a joke, those are a few of them. Kyler Bellistri, had a great year for us. He had two pretty stellar attackmen next to him, that drew a lot of attention, but he had a great year for us. So we got a team full of those guys.
Have any NCAA coaches approached you about, coaching with the shot clock since the NCAA proposed rule changes? And if so, what have you said to them? If not, what's wrong with them? Because they should definitely be calling you.
I've had a couple of conversations, but I'm sure we'll get more because they're still figuring it out too, trying to decide. But it's all I would ever say to them is it's the best thing for the players. It's going to let the players really, really shine, which is really the most important part of it. The players will shine. But I just tell them to make sure, realize that you've got plenty of time. You have to play quick, but not to hurry. There's a big difference. They got to get them thinking about playing fast, but not playing, like they're in a hurry to, to do something. So that's it. These guys will figure it out. It's not, I remember when I first came into the league, the shot clock was 45 seconds. And they changed it because we were scoring too much. So I think these college guys, they're that's what they do for a living. That's what they're great at. They'll figure it out real fast, and it's going to make the college game so much greater and really, really enjoyable to watch.
We've got got an off-field question for you here. What's the last great movie you remember seeing, and what's one of the worst ones you've seen?
The last great movie I watched was last night. It was Three Billboards from Evis, Missouri. Oh, my gosh, it was unbelievable. It was great. Worst movie? Oh, gosh. Oh, my son took me to watch, what was the superhero guy? Oh, my gosh. It was one of those superhero movies. I can't think of it right now.
Black Panther?
Black Panther. Yeah, I hated it. You guys probably loved it. I'm so old, I hated it.
It happens. We get a lot of great interaction with the movie section.
I like drama. I like great character stuff. I'm not big into special effects.
That's fair. Let's follow that up. Who is your favorite team sports athlete, and who is your favorite individual sports athlete?
Team sports, Wayne Gretzky. I read an article about him once that was just fascinating. They said that he, when he skated, he couldn't hear his feet on the ice. He was so light, and he was so far ahead of every play, you know, so... And I watched him in person once. I was blessed to catch him in an Islanders game, and every time he touched the puck, you held your breath because something was great going to happen. And individual athlete, I think Tiger, yeah. In his day, you know.
He's trying to find his way back.
Yeah, I think Tiger, yeah.
All right, last one for you, Coach. We can tell you're a music guy if you're at a concert right now. We're putting together a summer MLL playlist. Please give us one song, any style, like just a song you prefer, and we'll add it to our playlist.
I would say Grateful Dead, Scarlet Begonia, Fire on the Mountain, together. Yeah, you know, Scarlet Fire. If you're a dead friend, deadhead, you know that, yeah.
All right, Coach.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations again on the championship. It was an amazing game, another great run with the Outlaws, and we really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us.
Thanks so much, guys. I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for all you guys do for lacrosse and the MLL. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Chris, have you recovered from Coach O'Hara saying he did not like Black Panther yet?
I passed out for a minute. Yeah. I think it was a minute, but it might have been longer. But luckily, I'm sitting next to my bed, so I fell onto the bed like an old lady fainting. And then I generally got back up, and so I'm good to go. I'm okay now, but it was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to say Justice League or Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, people like what they like, and they don't like what they don't like. You know, I don't know. I can't endorse not liking Black Panther, but that's his opinion. Anything else he said there that kind of caught your interest?
Well, I thought it was cool how, you know, he threw the shout outs to a couple guys in particular. You know, he kicked off the conversation about Eli Goldbrecht, which I thought was, you know, he specifically mentioned the job he did on Jordan Wolfe. And so, you know, it's cool to hear somebody specifically looking out for, you know, the guys who don't get enough credit. I also thought it was cool hearing him talk about, you know, his relationship and, you know, what it's like to win against somebody you know.
Yeah, one of the great things that's happened for me personally this year is getting to know Coach Warder, who was kind of an unknown to me before the season started. I waited way too long to talk to him, but now that I've gotten to know him a little bit, like, he's an awesome dude. I really felt for him. I talked to him a tiny bit after the game and this week. But, yeah, he great dude. And, you know, unfortunately, the thing about sports is someone's got to lose. You know?
Yeah.
Someone's got to – it's two good guys versus two good guys sometimes. And that's what happened here. But we are going to close out with a segment that we forgot to do last week. And we didn't just use those MVPs from last week. We flipped it. We wrote new ones. So A for effort on us. And that is our MVP of the week. Chris, who is your final MVP of the 2018 MLL season?
My MVP of the week and of the, you know, maybe a season? I don't know. That's up for you guys to decide because I don't remember the last ones I picked. So my MVP, I'm giving it to whoever thought of the Dave Huntley Man of the Year Award. Excellent job by whoever that person or persons were. Personally, I never spoke with or met Dave Huntley, but I've heard nothing but good things. And just so many people have all these stories. He was one of those people, you know, you get people in a room and somebody's got a story and then somebody else has a story and they just kind of keep building on each other. But all these great ones, just about how giving he was, dedicated to his players and just how many lives he touched. And, you know, if you hadn't heard those, you know, you listen to this, you heard it last week and Josh Hopkins gave, you know, his really moving testimony just about him and what he meant to him and his life. Scott Ratliff, if you guys don't know, he's the one who won the award. So congrats to Scott Ratliff. And, you know, he played for him down in Atlanta. And we've heard him in the past talk about, you know, Dave, just not just X and O's. And, you know, he'd say, you know, really smart in that front, but also like it was his idea to keep Ratliff on the field, you know, last year when he was doing the thing where he was basically just playing between the arcs all game and he'd just play offense and defense and never left. And that was awesome and entertaining and it was actually effective as well. So it's, you know, always fun when something kind of out of the ordinary revolutionary happens in the game. So not just that, but, you know, also great guy kind of stories as well that Ratliff supplies. So, and personally, like, when it comes down to it, like, that should be the goal, right? Like, it should be the goal to be talked about in that kind of way. You know, I feel like it means you did something right, where if you're not in the room and, you know, a bunch of other people are, and they talk about you, they have some good stories to tell, and everybody agrees that you were a good guy. So it's an MVP for whoever it was who thought of that award. It seemed like everyone was in favor of it and thought that it couldn't be handled in a better way or given to a more deserving person.
Yeah, man. I didn't have tons of interaction with Huntley, but every time I talked to him, you know, like we were saying last week with Hawkins, he's funny. You know, he'll throw a joke at you, but it's like barbed. And if you don't pull it out right away, it just festers with you. I love people that can do that. I mean, I've tried to emulate doing that. I think it's fun. But he was genuinely a good dude, a nice dude who always had time. You know, for me, if I needed to call him for something, get a quote, he was good to talk to. And he always thought it was funny if I like made fun of his team. So he'd like always quote something back to me that I said in an article, and I'd be like, oh, that just means you read the article. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, like, he's one of those guys, like, yeah, you're right. And, it, you know, it's great that he has an award named after him, and it sucks that he's gone. But, yeah, I'm going to move on to my MVP, which is I'm already in a weird emotional place, so might as well stay here, right? We're already in the pocket. Let's take a couple punches. My MVP are the players of Major League Lacrosse. No matter what we talk about, the league doesn't exist without the players. In addition to that, I have zero hope that the MLL will turn it around as an organization. This MLL 2.0 thing, I know a buzzword when I hear it. You got to prove it. You know, I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm open to it, but I'm not hopeful. The fact that the players are still making almost nothing money-wise just to play at this high level is a testament to their effort and dedication. And though I want to end the podcast with a message of hope, I don't know if I can, because after seeing so little change, after being promised so much at the end of the last few seasons, I can't do it. You know, I have often made the mistake, and it is a mistake, I'm going to clarify that. I've made the mistake of saying that I love the MLL. I don't love the MLL. I love the players and the individuals on the teams that make the games possible. So if you're looking for hope, that's where it is. It's with the players. Thanks for listening to us all summer. We appreciate you. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and at the Kyle Devitt. Chris, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter and Spotify at ChrisRosie22 and Instagram at Chris Rosenthal.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next year. Probably.
See you.
Probably.